Are you craving incredible song recitals? Are you interested in a behind-the-scenes view into professional songmaking at the highest levels of artistry? Are you looking to develop your own artistic and entrepreneurial skills as a classical musician in this ever-changing 21st century landscape? If you found yourself saying yes to any of those questions, look no further than Cincinnati Song Initiative's week-long program, The Fellowship of the Song. Taking place this year from May 19 through 26, the Fellowship brings together some of the country's brightest song performers and teachers for a week of classes, concerts, and study events. And we invite you to join us as an auditor, either in person in Cincinnati or online wherever you may be located. When you join the Fellowship as an auditor, you gain instant access to the entire week's events and can go back and relive the magic through HD video recordings of each and every session. To learn more about this incredible new opportunity, visit CincinnatiSongInitiative.org/audit.
Is this microphone on?
Judging from the way that my ears are now bleeding, yes. Can't confirm.
Can I get some headphones?
No, you can't. You don't need them. Because you are not the professional podcaster here.
Hi, guys, and welcome to Follow the Leader with me, your host, Mandy Madrid Sikic. In season two of Follow the Leader, we are nerding out over Schubert's Winterreise. This is episode two of our Winterreise series, so if you haven't heard episode one, you might want to go back and listen to that so that you can get caught up with where we are here. If you are a fan of the podcast, remember to rate, review, and subscribe. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, that's not a thing. You know, all the usual podcast places. And please, if you like what we are doing on the podcast, tell your friends. And if you don't, then tell your enemies, because as I like to say, any publicity is good publicity. This is my first episode as part of the Cincinnati Song Initiative's new podcast network. Cincinnati Song Initiative, or CSI for short, is a world-class organization dedicated to promoting and innovating the song genre by creating welcoming and accessible experiences for everyone. In addition to their live concerts, CSI engages a global audience through its digital content, including a growing network of podcasts. I'm really stoked to now be a part of their family, as I'll have access to lots of cool resources to continue making the best quality podcast I possibly can for you all. It was really cool, actually, how we got connected. I was listening to CSI's podcast, Song Cycle, and I sent in a voice memo, and they got back to me, and we ended up connecting, and pretty soon they invited me to be a part of their family, and so it's just a really cool and exciting opportunity. Can't wait to see where it all goes. All right, guys. Time to talk about some Schubert. Let's get into things. Here today to continue our titillating discussion is my partner, Brian Sikic. Woohoo! Brian, good to have you back today.
Oh, why, thank you. I wasn't sure if I would get the call up again after our last session. You know, we also, is titillating an actual word? Isn't it titillating?
No, I don't think so.
No, titillating is slang because you know why.
No, I think you're mixing up tantalizing and titillating. Let me see. Titillating is like stimulating and exciting.
Well, titillating. As they are.
on Google, it says, oh.
It's
Wait,
titillating.
I shouldn't have used this word. No, it is a word, but it's arousing mild sexual excitement or interest.
I wonder why it's called that. Titillating. Yeah, I saw the word there and I was like, I'm not sure why this has been chosen.
I chose this word because I thought it was a funny word, which it is, but it has more of a sexual connotation than I remembered.
So you should have used tantalizing discussion? Or is that like over the top?
No, I just should have used a different word. No, I really like the word titillating. Well, look, Much Art Song does have to do, like, it has a lot of sexual connotation in it.
Is that why you chose the word titillating?
No.
You just went straight for it?
I just went straight. It's a good word. I mean, how often do you get to say it?
I mean, I work it into conversation on a daily basis.
You didn't even know it was a word until just now when we Googled
it. No, I just corrected
you. Because
you
thought it was titillating.
No, I... True. You are right.
Look, let's just agree we were both wrong and both right.
To agree.
Agree to agree. In any case, Brian, I'm glad you're here today. Thanks for your presence. Today, we are actually going to discuss two songs. So, numbers 2 and 3 of the cycle, Die Wetterfahne and Gefrorene Tränen. In our last episode, we spent a lot of time digging into an overview and some main introductory stuff. Today, we continue the journey and deepen our immersion into the traveler's world. Brian, out of curiosity, do you remember the basic idea of the song we covered last time? Gute Nacht?
You know, it was a bit of a journey to kind of try to dive back in there. It feels like it's been a while since we've had this conversation. Gute Nacht is good night. I just cheated a little bit and went to your next paragraph and read some of what you put. And it all came just washing back, where the guy has been scorned by love. He's been turned away by the love of his life. He's leaving town. But there is an element that I did remember that you didn't have in your paragraph two of there's a little bit of like a selflessness or like a nobleness to what he does.
Well, and he leaves town and he doesn't disturb her sleep, I think is the truly noble thing, is that he says he's not going to disturb her sleep as he leaves town, but he's just going to write on her door so that she can see that the last thing that he did was think about her.
Yeah, he chose like the drama-free version of and just had to internalize it all. And so much of that internalizing is kind of how the poem and the song is like kind of describing his angst, I guess.
Yeah.
Or his situation too.
Mm-hmm. I wasn't paying attention, so I don't know what you just said.
Wow. Fantastic. Now you know how I feel all the time. Wait, no. Now I know how you feel all the time.
Okay. Right. So essentially, in the last song, we find out guy loves a girl, doesn't work out for one reason or another. Guy decides to leave town under the veil of snowy night, but on the way out of town, stops by to write goodnight on her door so that she can see that the last thing he did as he left was think of her. So, moving on to the next song. If you had to guess where the next song might take place, where would you guess its location to be?
I mean, just from my recollection of this whole song cycle, on the road, the journeyman on the highway of sorts, countryside.
Right? You would think, but I'm tickled to say he doesn't make it very far. Literally, he can still see her house.
Does he just move super slow?
Sometimes. So the reason we know that he can still see her house is because the poem talks about him seeing the weather vane that sits atop the roof of her house. Let's begin with a translation of the poem. Die Wetterfahne, the weather vane. The wind plays with the weather vane on my beautiful sweetheart's house. Then thought I in my delusion that it whistles at the poor fugitive. He should have noticed sooner on this house was attached the sign, so that he never would have searched in this house for a loyal woman. The wind plays inside with hearts as out on the roof, only not so loudly. Why would they ask about my pain? Their child is a rich bride.
Okay, so I said drama-free earlier. What I meant was... He chose to not be dramatic He chose to not introduce drama into her life, but clearly he's still in a dramatic headspace.
So actually, we're gonna talk about that. I'm glad you noticed that for sure. We'll get into that a little bit later. So insightful of you.
Thank you.
So this poem is interesting for a few reasons. It gives us a clearer picture about why he is leaving town and how he feels about it. We are presented with the idea that he considers her perhaps a bit fickle. The wind plays inside with hearts just as it does on the outside with the weather vane. He explains that he wished he had noticed it sooner because it would have alerted him to the fact that the kind of woman he was seeking, a loyal or faithful, a steadfast woman, did not dwell therein. How many times have we wished for something in retrospect? You know, you turn around proverbially. Why can't I say that word? It's proverbially. You turn around proverbially and can see all the signs that what you were seeking was not inside that house that you were just in. Yet somehow you did not put two and two together until too late. Right? I mean, that's happened to me lots. That's, I think, where this saying comes from, that hindsight's 20/20. All of a sudden you look back and you're like, oh, there's the sign. I just totally missed it. Also, I think when he's speaking here of his love not being loyal or true, it's not necessarily that she cheated on him, although she may have. The symbol of a rooster actually has, throughout literature and culturally, people use it when they've been cuckolded, meaning that they've been cheated on. That could be a sign here that she did truly cheat on him. But I usually take it more to mean that she wasn't faithful in how dedicated she was to him. She wasn't wholly devoted to him enough to make it work, no matter what. So perhaps he was not, you know, of a highborn enough position, he didn't have enough wealth or whatever the case may be. And so it wasn't enough to make her be wholly devoted to him. Maybe. I mean, maybe it's just that someone better came into town and she sets her sights on this new chap, you know? we don't know. And again, she could have just straight up cheated on him. He reveals a few things about himself in this song. One is that he's already experiencing a break with reality. You know, he says that he thought in his delusion that the wind specifically was whistling at him, the poor fugitive who was escaping from town. This is important because it is the first instance of this break from reality. He imagines nature to be provoking him at many different points throughout the cycle, and, you know, anyone else passing by this house might simply take the scene for what it is, a windy event that blows the weather vane about. But he interprets it specifically to be taunting or mocking him. I don't really think an objective assessment of the situation would see reality in that way.
But emotionally, like, that's the context that he's in. And so he just projects that onto what he's seeing. Yeah. And it's like a reflection right back in of what he's feeling in his heart. Maybe.
Right. And so this is where we get to your point. Remember how we previously said that he was noble. In the last song, he does not make himself out to be the pathetic, victimized type character. But in this one, I think we do see a shade of victimization. It's a fairly fleeting moment, though. The entire song only lasts, it's like less than 2 minutes, as Schubert said it. Oh, and one other thing that I think is interesting is that the final line where he says their child is a rich bride, he says it in a sort of mocking or perhaps patronizing tone, saying their child is a rich bride, almost as if it's an accusation, like there's something wrong with her character because of her wealth status. So that softness that he experienced at the end of Gute Nacht, where he didn't want to disturb her sleep, that's gone. Or is it? Something that I've been coming to think about more and more as I've been going through the cycle this time around is that maybe he's experiencing the whole gamut of emotions. Like, it's a prism of emotion with different facets. Like, they're all in there, but depending on how the light hits it, one emotion might be highlighted over another. And in this particular song, we're happening happening. We happen to be highlighting the victimization a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. You know, and it, I mean, it's so relatable too, to a certain extent, because I mean, we oftentimes go from such highs to lows where, like you said earlier, mm-hmm. like objectively standing back and looking at the scene, you would just be like, you know, he literally went from, yeah, this noble, like, I'm doing this for her. Like, I yeah. like, this sucks, but I can handle it. And now it's like, I can't handle this. Like, I'm feeling sorry for myself in this moment.
Yeah.
But it, yeah, I mean, that can happen so quickly, how the mind just like, you know, snap of the fingers and you're wallowing.
100%. 100%. Musically speaking, as Graham Johnson points out, there is a lot of unison playing between the hands in Winterreise, though this song displays an exceptional amount of it. Both the intro and the outro are completely in unison. In them, we hear the wind swooping up around us, churning some leaves, throwing up some dust or loose snow, perhaps, and, as he says in the song, playing with the heart. The trill that ends this little figure, I think it's the weather vane. It's almost like you can hear it or see it clattering about on the rooftop with that trill. I think that the unison playing of this might show that it's single-minded, this wind, or is it he that's single-minded? It could symbolize his obsession, something that we'll get deeper into as the cycle progresses. All in all, it's a rather violent display, and I think this is no mistake. It's such a contrast from the last song. I think we are meant to understand that we may never know what comes next. If Die Wetterfahne can follow Gute Nacht, we are aware that we never know what might be around the corner. Now, this is all just in the introduction. Once the voice comes in, the feeling of being tossed about by the wind is reinforced. Just listen to this melody.
Der Wind spielt mit der Wetterfahne auf meines schönen Liebchens Haus.
It's here, it's there. It almost makes me a bit motion sick. When he talks about imagining the weather vane whistling at him, the piano creates this effect with this grace note figure. Oh, wait. You can't hear it.
That's what I said. I need headphones.
You haven't been able to hear any of those.
Well, I've been hearing it from your headphones.
You said I know this one, but I was just like, yeah.
Yeah, because I could hear it through your headphones.
That's so funny. Funny, Brian. Okay, here we go. This figure happens again when he regretfully admits that if he'd noticed it sooner, he would have never looked for a faithful woman inside. I think the pairing of these words with this figure reinforces the feeling of his being mocked, and, as in the introduction, it's a rather violent musical representation of what's going on in the scene.
So hätt er nimmer suchen wollen, im Haus ein treues Frauenbild.
Sort of feels as if there's like a little bit of a dagger twist in there, like a little.
Yeah. Ooh, I like that dagger twist. Mm-hmm, that's mm-hmm, good. He's feeling some stuff.
Yeah, he is.
The song continues in a similar vein as he goes on to say that the wind plays with hearts on the inside as it does on the roof. And he bemoans the fact that no one really is going to ask about his pain, his hardship, his emotional state. I think that's more of that victimization type mindset. The child inside, his love interest, is, after all, a rich bride. I like what Ian Bostridge says about the piano part the second time the wanderer sings Rich Bride. He says, in a brilliant musical flourish, we then hear the money spilling out from the piano. 12 brilliant, sparkling semi-quavers. I wish money would spill out of my piano. You know what I'm saying?
I like money.
Oh, why doesn't it just fall out from the keys, from between the strings?
You could just sell your piano and then we'd have more money.
Oh, actually, that's a really good point. Yeah. I've been thinking about it.
No.
It's been one of those years. Do it. So the money spilling out of the piano sounds like this.
Ihr Kind ist eine reiche Braut.
The
sounds like slot machine or something like that.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. You heard it. The outroduction, which I'm not sure that's a word, but I like to use it.
It's better than titillating.
Which is a word, I just used it wrongly. The outroduction leaves us with the same exact scene we encountered upon the beginning of the song. The hands in unison whipping around the house, around the head, and around our hearts. I'm going to save that for when we hear our full performance of it. I love what John Reed says about this song in the Schubert Companion. He says, "In die Wette Fahne, he pauses on his journey and we catch a sharp glimpse of the hostile world about him." The song is first of all a marvelously original piece of tone painting. The fitful scurrying wind, the biting cold, the empty landscape, the gyrating weather vane are all portrayed with a kind of photographic intensity by those bare swooping unisons, wide leaps, and insistent trills. Now, I couldn't finish up without mentioning this random fact I found out about this song. There's actually an orchestration made of it by Hans Zender, and he added an actual wind machine.
Is that a typo? Is that supposed to say Hans Zimmer?
No. Hans Zender.
Oh.
Although, it would be cool to see what Hans Zimmer would do with, like, a reimagining of Winterreise. But I just love that idea of, like, bringing a wind machine on stage and, like, turning it on during this song.
What is a wind machine?
It's
exactly
a machine
that makes
wind. I think it might sound something like this.
No. You don't need to play wind sound effects. Mine was sufficient.
Okay. You say so. Well, with that, unless you have any questions, I think we are ready to take a listen. Oh, and right, I just wanted to say a heartfelt thank you to my bestie, Dr. Tyler Rees, for singing for us today. As in all of our Winterreise episodes, it's Tyler's lovely voice that you will be hearing. So let's take a listen.
Let's dive in.
Aufgestärkte Schild, so hätt er Nimmel suchen wollen, im Haus ein treues Frauenbild. Der Wind spielt drinnen mit den Herzen wie auf dem Dach, nur nicht so laut. Was fragen Sie nach meinen Schmerzen? Ihr Kind ist eine reiche Braut. Der Wind spielt drinnen mit den Herzen wie auf dem Dach, nur nicht so laut. Was fragen Sie nach meinen Schmerzen? Was fragen Sie nach meinen Schmerzen? Ihr Kind ist eine reiche Braut.
You can definitely hear the wind. It's like its own little wind machine.
Yeah, I was going to say, even without the true wind machine.
But it's a musical tapestry of a wind machine.
It is. It certainly is. You know, something I wanted to point out before we move on is that based on the autograph, so like the manuscript, that Schubert wrote, you can actually see that he struggled with the song a great deal. So you would see that he would write and then cross it out or like change things, and that he went through a number of different iterations of certain passages before he settled on this windswept final version that we now have. And it's one of those that I love so much because it's this just perfect little vignette in such a short amount of time. I mean, that's one of the things I love about Art Song, that we just kind of enter this universe. And the cool thing about Winterreise is that we enter it and then we're seeing different, you know, elements of it over the course of like an hour and 15-ish minutes. And many times when you're at an Art Song recital, you're only in the little songs universe for a short time. And that's really cool, but sometimes it's hard to, I don't know, I want a little bit more of the thing. And so this is a particularly satisfying experience because we get to experience these different elements of the same universe for an extended period of time.
Yeah, instead of just like dipping a toe in and out, this one, like, you're in it. You can really do a deep dive with it.
Yeah, yeah. Speaking of which, we are going to continue our deep dive and move on to song number 3. One of my favorite songs from all of Winterreise, Gefrorene Tränen. Whatever violence and unbridled emotion we felt in the last song, it's completely gone in this one. The title translates as frozen tears, and we quite literally feel the frozen nature of the subject matter as the song opens. But alas, I'm getting ahead of myself. Let's read a translation of the poem. Frozen teardrops fall from my cheeks. Have I then not noticed that I have been weeping? Ah, tears, my tears. And are you entirely so tepid that you freeze to ice like cool morning dew? And burst then from the source, the breast so glowing hot as if it would melt the entire winter's ice. Okay, let's get right into this. The piano starts, and already we hear blocks of ice. And then right after that, a teardrop. Those two elements together sound like this. And then when extended to create the entire introduction, sounds like this. Now, this little offbeat accent that you heard throughout serves two purposes. I think obviously it's his teardrops, but also it's another instance of him being provoked. He says at the beginning that he's been weeping without even realizing it. So while most of the time he's being provoked by elements outside of himself, in this song, it's literally his own emotions that are poking at him, sort of like a finger to the ribs. I imagine him sitting very still somewhere. He's nearly frozen in place, but reaches up to touch his cheek, his arm perhaps cracking with some ice that's on it. And as his fingers reach his skin, he feels that it is wet. He marvels at the fact that he has been weeping without noticing it, and these offbeat provocations continue. His obsession that was hinted at in the last song continues here. There are only about 55 measures in this song, yet something like 33 of those measures have that offbeat accent. It's a slightly obsessive feature of it, I think. At one point, he comes to address his tears. He nearly growls this. Listen to how low Schubert set this vocal part.
My Tränen, meine Tränen.
It's not meant to be pretty. And I feel like that's a great summary of how it can be to experience our own emotions. Like, it's not a pretty situation. Now, I know you and I have actually been experiencing this somewhat as we've been mourning the death of our beloved Sheltie Czar. And for any longtime listeners, you'll remember having heard Czar sing on the podcast. He was just always around listening to me practice, and he used to love to join in, and he'd sing along. He especially loved the minor keys. It was something that was always so silly about him. And unfortunately, you know, we had a really difficult situation with him at the end. He had a brain tumor and then just kind of succumbed to a general unwellness related to that. And I think you and I have, I mean, I can't necessarily speak for you, just from what I've observed from the two of us kind of grieving together. The emotion, it's so overpowering and completely overtakes you. I will sometimes literally be sitting somewhere and I'm just suddenly overcome with the emotion that arises. And it isn't pretty. It's visceral. It's physical. I can't scramble away from it. And I think that that's what I find so compelling about this poem. And the fact that he addresses his tears and that he's honestly, like, taken aback and confused. Like, why should they be so tepid? Why should they be so lukewarm? Because it's coming from a source that's, like, so burning hot with emotion that he thinks that these tears should burn through all of the winter's ice. And you'll hear the experience of that emotion and his subsequent reaction to it overtake him and then leave him in much the same position we found him. This particular point in the cycle, I've been really relating to it lately, just based on what we've been going through. And
yeah, I mean, the grief has definitely been a wild ride, to say the least. And it's kind of surreal talking about this as we talk about grief, as we talk about our you know, little buddy who was very, very much involved and, like, so saturated in all of this, you know, like, yeah. He has heard hours and hours of the song cycle being practiced and, you know, not necessarily performed, but, you know, he's heard, he's been there for all of it. And even the parts that he would sing to. And
he actually would always sing to Die Wetterfahne, mm-hmm. the last one that we covered. Mm-hmm. He loved singing to that one.
Yeah. and so, yeah, I mean, it's definitely kind of wild how it's all tied together for us. But I mean, more to this point, it's cool that he acknowledges, like, he actually does notice eventually that he is just, like, weeping.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a little bit of confusion in it too, but I think maybe ultimately, yeah, it just kind of comes in, like, it comes in this huge wave.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't know if, yeah, like you said, like, I don't know if he's any different from before versus after. Like, mm-hmm. he goes through this whole thing and he's kind of still in the same position. Like,
yeah.
His situation has not changed even after all of these tears. And I think that that's kind of just the human condition. You know, you can still grieve something and it doesn't change anything. It doesn't fix anything. There's so much work that goes into it. Like, it is so physical. It is so draining. Yeah. And then when you're done grieving, oftentimes there's still more to do.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I really like what you said about, you know, it leaves him in the same place. Like, you, it is crazy how you can go through this insane emotional experience. And for anyone who might be confused about why we're so emotional over our dog, we've hardly been married without him. We had him from the time he was a little pup, and we don't have any kids. And he was really our family. And it was the three of us doing life together. And he was so much more than just a dog. He really seemed, his energy was like a person energy. And he was just there for us. I remember when I moved back from London, and that was so traumatic for me, like really walking away from the career that I thought I was going to have, you know, for my whole life, and coming back, and like, you were here and Czar was here. And there were so many times where I'd be stressing out over a recital, stressing out over a performance. And I would literally go to the beach with Czar, and I would know that no matter what happened at the recital, no matter how much I messed up, like, I was going to be okay because my dog still loved me. And it's been, yeah, like you said, a wild ride to now be without his energy here with us. And no matter how intense the grieving becomes, we end up kind of in the same position. And it's good to have the release for sure. But essentially, like, we're still left with the emptiness of his absence. We're still left with him being gone.
Yeah. I mean, I guess there is, in the context of this, there's a little bit of, I don't want to say like an element of hope necessarily, but there is more to experience. There is more to, to process and, you know, kind of keep experiencing those emotions. So in that regard, it's like, okay, we will not be in this forever.
Yeah, but at the same time,
his journey doesn't necessarily get
awesome. Yeah, like, there's lots of steps along the way where it's like pretty rough.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I mean, this is only song number 3. There are 24 in this cycle, and to already be feeling like this intensity only at song number 3, it's kind of insane. And you know, to the point of performing this, it actually does have to be sort of paced. You know, I remember the first time I got on stage to perform this, thinking, oh my God, an hour from now, I'm still going to be here, like, playing this same work. Like, still going to be on stage, not having had a break. And that's very similar to his journey. You know, he's everywhere, every step along the way. He's not really having a break. I mean, there is Rast. There is a Frühlingstraum. So, you know, but even within all of these things, there's still this kind of heaviness, and it's not an easy journey. That's
for
sure. Boy
can't get no breaks.
Boy can't get no breaks. So I'm not going to play any more excerpts because, in all honesty, there's not much else that makes up this song, and it's what I love so much about Schubert at the height of his powers. There's fairly little on the page. He wrote super economically, yet the power with which it lands is absolutely remarkable. The mark of a true genius to create something from next to nothing. And just as a little side note before we listen, I honestly don't know what it is about this song. I love playing it so much. I have to practice not smiling while I'm performing it, because it's not a happy song, right? It's very, very sad. He's frozen in this grief, yet I'm so happy when I play it because I love it, that I'll find myself making this ridiculous grinning face. It's just, I don't know, it's not appropriate. But this is a podcast, so I'm going to smile however much I want to this time around. It's really funny. It's honestly, it's a bop. To sing Gefrorene Tränen for you ladies and gentlemen and all non-binary individuals, I present to you once again Dr. Tyler Reese.
Gefrorne Tropfen fallen von meinen Wangen ab. Ob es mir denn entgangen, dass ich geweinet hab, dass ich geweinet hab. Tränen, meine Tränen, und seid ihr gar so lau, dass ihr erstarrt zu Eise wie kühlem Morgentau.
quäle dir Brust so glühend heiß, als wolltet ihr zerschmelzen des ganzen Winters Eis, des ganzen Winters Eis. Ihr trinkt doch aus der Quelle dir Brust so glühend heiß, als wolltet ihr zerschmelzen des ganzen Winters Eis, des ganzen Winters Eis.
I think it's interesting how he goes sort of from this noble headspace, this kind of code of honor, not burdening her with drama. Then he goes to like being the victim, but then it goes from victim to an even darker place of like this, like it is grief, but it's also, he's purely observing what the heck is going on with his emotional state. It's almost like an out of body experience where he's like, what is happening to me right now? Yeah, it's a really interesting how he's experiencing it, but he's sort of in wonder of how he's experiencing it.
Yeah, actually, I really like that observation, the out of body experience. There's a recording of, and I'll put a link to it in the show notes. Hermann Pry on YouTube, he performs this like the most like a statue I have ever seen someone. Like, he's so still, I don't know how he's singing, and it's so effective, it's so compelling. It's like he isn't in his body. Like, if he wanted to move his hand or his shoulder, or he couldn't.
Is that intentional?
I think it's Hermann Pry's intention to be that like frozen in the ice.
For this specific song.
Yes, yes, yes.
Gotcha.
He's performing this song.
I thought he was just frozen for the whole. Oh. I was like, wow. That's a lot commitment. Of control.
No. For this specific song, he just like freezes in place, and he moves his mouth, but I mean, obviously he's singing, he's alive. Like,
but there's like a rigidity to him.
There's this just absolute stillness that it's kind of breathtaking. When I watched it for the first time, I just saw it this week. I was like, oh, I want to try that. Like, the next time I perform this, I want to try. Well, which is going to be so hard for me because I'm usually like bebopping, you know, my
smiling
head back and forth,
yeah. Yeah, what's you
know,
wrong with you?
But it, which is the exact opposite. But I think that dichotomy of wanting to move with it, but not, like you said, it's out of body. Like you couldn't even move your body if you would want to move your body. It's that frozen. I think is really cool. So I'll link to that recording in the show notes so that.
But it was interesting that I didn't, just even from reading the poem or like reading the text, that was one part of like understanding that. But the way in which Tyler sang that in the state of bewilderment of like, what is happening? Like, and you could hear that through just his intensity or through his tone or through, you know,
yeah,
through his delivery of that.
Yeah.
It was pretty cool.
Yeah. I don't know if this is also one of Tyler's. I'll have to ask him. And I definitely want to have Tyler on to just be a guest at some point in time, you know, during our Venturiza series.
You should fly him out from Boston and he can bring us dessert. Because Tyler is a fantastic baker.
We should have him fly out and bring us dessert. But I do think I remember us both when we performed it together, like both absolutely loving this one. I think And actually, I should say, Die Wetterfahne is actually one of his favorites. He has a tattoo of it on his forearm.
Oh, no way.
We both, yeah. I don't think I've ever said this before, but we both went and got Winterreise tattoos together. And mine
wow.
is, yeah, super okay, nerd status.
This is, yeah, this is mega.
next level.
Mega
but
song.
Tyler's Winterreise tattoo is of Die Wetterfahne. And mine, oh, actually, I have two. I have two Winterreise tattoos. I'll talk about them more later when we
Link
cover
in
those
the bio.
When we cover those songs. But I have one of song number 15, and then I have one of song number 24. So if anyone wants to go look those up, you'll.
Wait, is that the one on your calf?
The one on my leg is song number 24. The one on my arm is song number 15. I will reveal more about them at a later time. Well, I think that's a wrap for today. Thanks so much, guys, for listening to Follow the Leader. Remember, if you just can't get enough Winterreise in your life, then you might want to try singing Die Wetterfahne and Gefrorene Tränen with me. You can find me on YouTube as Mandy Madrid Sikic. Click on the Winterreise playlist, and these two song accompaniments are there. Remember that Follow the Leader can be found in all the usual podcasty places. And please, if you like what you hear today, tell your friends. And if you don't, then tell your enemies. Because as I like to say, any publicity is good publicity. Publicity. We're almost at the end, guys. We can do this. Also, please leave us a review. It really helps boost the podcast's visibility and helps other leader lovers like you find our work. If you'd like to provide additional support and keep Season 2 running strong, you can support me on Patreon at patreon.com/leadernerd. In addition, you can follow me on Instagram at leadernerd. That's at LIEDERNERD.
My Venmo handle is also at Brian-Sikic. I also willingly take donations. For any and all, you can just put goods or services.
I didn't bring any bribes for you this time. I failed. Last time I had a burrito for you. So.
Ah, that's true. Well, I don't know. You'll make it up to me.
It was a little bit of a different kind of day, but yeah, I will make it up to you next time.
Excellent. Burrito. I have one burrito token.
All right. Until next time. See you later, nerds.
Trinkt doch aus der Quelle, der Brust so glühend heiß, als wolltet ihr zerschmelzen des ganzen Winters Eis, des ganzen Winters Eis.
Normally, I cough to mask the sound, so no one knows I'm actually opening a can of
normally after
beverages.
After I open a can of beverage, I go. Okay, there's no eating or drinking sounds on this podcast, though. No, Brian! Oh my God. No.
If you love this podcast, then you'll love the Song Cycle podcast, also by Cincinnati Song Initiative. Song Cycle introduces the coolest and awesomest leaders of the song world today and dives into getting to know them and their unique stories, where they think song in the 21st century is headed, and lots of other great topics. If you're looking for your next source of inspiration as you continue on your own musical journey as a song lover, look no further than Song Cycle with me, your host, Sam Martin. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and join the conversation.